Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI.
Before I would just hire and try to find people and plug them into the role and get things done, I've shifted over the years in which I try to hire people who have done exactly what I'm looking to do multiple times before and did it successfully. And that was game changing to me, but that took me just too long to learn. I wish I knew that from day one.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, he prefers the Winter Olympics over the Summer Olympics, Pat Flynn.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And in the minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. You can get unparalleled access to job seekers with over 350 million unique visitors globally, according to Indeed data, and an extended reach through Glassdoor. I love how adaptable Indeed is, and it's just your all-in-one hiring platform. You can do everything on there, interviews, messaging. There's nothing else that you need. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/smartpassive. Just go to Indeed.com/smartpassive right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/smartpassive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. If you know anything about me, you know I love traveling back into time and to use that to discover new things, not just sit in front of the TV and watch Back to the Future. But today we're going back into time with Neil Patel. Neil Patel, a person who's been on the show once before, but that was 6 years ago. A lot has happened since then, but we actually go back even further to the very, very, very first start of his business. We kind of go era by era. We both go back and forth. It's not even really an interview, but more of a conversation about how business has changed, how marketing has changed, what has worked once before doesn't work anymore, and where are things going? And we finish this conversation with probably the most epic piece of advice you could ever ask for when it comes to starting something new or taking the thing that you've started and having it actually finally see some results. And so make sure to stick around for that. But Neil Patel, great friend, amazing, amazing marketing mind. I'm so jazzed that he's here today. And again, welcome to the session, and I hope you enjoy. So here he is, Neil Patel. Neil, welcome back to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. It's been a minute, for sure.
Yeah, it's been a while, a few years at least.
It was 6 years ago you were on the show in episode 242, and a lot has happened since then on my side, a lot has happened on your side, a lot has happened in the world. And I do want to talk about the world today and kind of what you're thinking about, because you always seem to be on the forefront and ahead and advanced as far as like what's coming, and we'll get there. But I think for a lot of audience members who are listening right now, they might not know your history and also even my history in a way and kind of where we came from, because we are kind of like two old geezers in this space now.
Yeah.
And so why don't we just chat about like the past and the kind of way we were thinking about growing our businesses, and we'll just kind of end up to today and see where we end up next. And you down to have a fun little reminiscent Back to the Future episode, if you will?
Yeah, let's do it. What's funny is I remember when you first started out, I don't know how many people you have now, but you have a lot of people. When you first started, it was just you for the longest time.
For the longest time. Yeah, I was editing everything, publishing everything. I was doing all the graphic design and stuff. It took me like 6 years to get over the fact that I shouldn't do everything myself, and I'm not the best at everything myself. And I only wish I did that sooner. I found help sooner. Did you always know when you started out that you were going to eventually build a team, and you have a massive team as well? How soon until you figure that out?
From the early days, when I first started out, I had people early on, nowhere near the amount of people I have today, but I was a big believer in hiring to scale. But yeah, you don't really have a choice, right? Like, when we first started off, we would do whatever we could. Both didn't have tons of money. We just tried grinding it out, hustle, figure out hacks, get results, make more money, pay the bills, and just keep going from there.
What year did all this online business stuff start for you? Just so we can go back.
Yeah, so for me, it started 2002, 2003.
Yeah, so you were even earlier than me, because I started in 08 after I got let go. So tell me about the wild, wild west of the internet in 2002. And what were your first projects? How did you begin to start figure things out back then? There wasn't even YouTube back then, actually.
No, and there wasn't Facebook either back then.
That's crazy.
MySpace, during my time when I started, MySpace was blowing up, and then they sold and everyone thought that was ridiculous. But my first website was a job board, believe it or not, because I couldn't find a job, so I created my own job board.
How did you build that?
I paid some people on a form called Web Hosting Talk. I don't even know if that exists anymore.
Never even heard of that. That's crazy.
So then did that, couldn't get traffic to it by paying some marketing firms, lost all the money. Had to learn it on my own, got good at marketing, but back then it wasn't tough. Like, you put in keywords in a title tag, you build some links, and then you would pop up to the top of page one really quickly. And then even when I started getting traffic, I was generating no revenue. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work out, but eventually I switched over into consulting, and that was my first real business, quote unquote.
What did you consult about?
How to grow your traffic. Because that was the only thing I was good at. So I was just like, oh, let me just help people do this instead.
Oh, okay.
And I would like run home from school, pick up my phone, cold call all the people that are paying for the paid advertising on Google, and try to convince them to hire me on a performance base. If I got them traffic, more traffic, pay me. If I don't pay me. And there was no real expenses on their end or risk expenses.
Right.
You know, if I provided the results. But that's how I started off.
So what was the secret back then for ranking? Was it literally just taking people who had no idea how to rank as far as titles and keywords and stuff and just implementing that for them?
It was. There wasn't much more to it. Titles, keywords, and links. That was
it. How old were you?
Content.
How old were you at this point, like making money from the internet already?
16.
16, dude, that's insane. So, you know, I don't know about your family, but my family, very traditional, go to college, get a job, you know, all that kind of stuff. How is this changing your mind about like the American dream and like the path that we were all told at 16? Did you already make decisions about your future at that point and what you wanted to do and what you didn't want to do?
Yes, but my parents are very traditional like yours. My mom's a teacher, so that didn't go quite well. I was doing well. I was doing 20 grand a month at 16, which is a lot of money even for today. Now, keep in mind, 20 grand a month at 16, I eventually lost it all. So it really wasn't 20 grand a month because bad investments, poor decisions, okay. Not really spending it, just poor business decisions more than anything else. But yeah, I was telling my mom and dad, I was like, well, I'm making more than both you guys combined. So why should I go to college? Not a great way to start off a conversation with your parents.
Did you end up going to college?
I did. I ended up getting a degree from Cal State Fullerton. It took me five and a half years. I had enough high school credits where it should have taken me 2.5 years, but I was on the 5.5 year plan. So
yeah,
took a little bit too long and kept just going after that. Things got harder. But out of curiosity with you, when you started off, I remember you started blogging and you would share your income. I don't know if you still share your income, but you used to share your income.
I don't like a report anymore with all the things. It grew to a point where they were actually pushing people away. Like, oh, Pat's grown too big now, or those numbers were never achievable. So I stopped them after, I think, 8 years of doing it every single month. But I mean, I still get people who come to me and say, it was your income reports that drew me in. It was the transparency. Nobody was doing that at the time.
Yeah, because I remember seeing it years and years ago. Your income reports were just well into the six figures, right? Over 100 grand a month.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it was over 100 grand a month, or it was close. And you could see the affiliate revenue that you were making from like hosting and selling other stuff. I think you had like a food truck thing. I could be wrong on this.
That's correct. Yeah. I had a food truck niche website. I had a security guard training niche website. I built this little website to help people create a clickable map that they can then download and put on their website. All these little projects here and there, which were really cool and people got inspired by them. There was a tweet earlier today that said, I had no idea what I was doing, but 9 years ago, I got my first AdSense check thanks to a website that Pat helped me build. And I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. But it never felt like a business, right? It was always like hacking my way, trying to make a dollar here, trying to make a dollar there. And those dollars added up for sure. But it took a while for me to get that, like, I'm going to make a business out of this. I'm going to be CEO of a company. When you were 16, it sounds like you were maybe somewhat scrappy, but also already thinking ahead in terms of hiring a team and actually building a business and such. Where did you, at that time, get most of your education and inspiration from? Did you have mentors? Where did you learn from?
No, just trial and error. Yeah, I had some mentors, but most of it was trial and error. The big thing that I found is, it took me, so I'm 36 now, and I've been an entrepreneur for pretty much 20 years. But it took me a good 17 plus years until I realized how important hiring is. See, I always hired. Yeah. I didn't hire correctly before. And I'm not saying I hire correctly now, but the way I thought about it was very different. Before, I would just hire and try to find people and plug them into the role and get things done. Uh-huh. And I've shifted over the years in which I try to hire people who have done exactly what I'm looking to do multiple times before and did it successfully. Because then your chance of succeeding are much higher and your chance of failure are much lower. And you get the end result actually much quicker because they know what mistakes to avoid. And that was game changing to me, but that took me just too long to learn. I wish I knew that from day one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of things that I wish I knew as well. I wish I knew more about the power of software earlier. I mean, I had experimented with that in 2010 and failed miserably, but you've done very, very well with software. Was Crazy Egg your first sort of big software thing that you built? And I know that, you know, we had Heaton on the show earlier and he talked a little bit about that story, but was that your first foray into software?
First real one, but it wasn't meant to be. See, we ended up, we had a website called SiteBlimp.
Okay.
SiteBlimp was supposed to be Google Analytics, but a free version of it. Well, technically Google Analytics is free. But back then, Urchin was paid. which is now Google Analytics. Google bought a company called Urchin, renamed it to Google Analytics, and made it free. And we were going to create a version of Google Analytics like you're seeing now, or Urchin software back then, and just make it 100% free. But Google beat us to the punch. And when we were creating Siteblimp, we're like, hey, we should create a spinoff product called Crazy Egg that just shows you the visuals and use that as a free product and drive more into Siteblimp. And we never launched Siteblimp. We launched Crazy Egg, and it took a long time to grow. It did well overall. The business has been around well over 10 years. But what I've learned in business is when you give businesses like 3+ years, you start seeing some traction, but it's like usually after that 5-year mark where things really start hitting their strides.
That's a long time to get to the point where you can see that. And I don't know, maybe that discourages people who are listening now. Like for those who are listening who are like 3 years, 5 years, like that's a long time and I want results now. How would you respond to those people?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It can take a long time. If you're looking to get results really quickly, you're going to be disappointed. If you're patient, you can create something that's life-changing. You can be extremely happy, but you just have to be patient. Bill Gates says it best, and I'm going to butcher the quote. People overestimate what they can accomplish in a year, but they underestimate what they can accomplish in 10 years. He has a quote somewhere around something like that. And it's so true. And the other big thing that people end up having the issue too is when they know it's going to take a long time, they lose focus and they do too many things. And because they do too many things, just the business doesn't work out the way they want.
That's a great point. And I love that quote. It sounds like you hit it right, but I don't know what the exact quote is either. And that's okay. But I think we get the point. Let's go back to, okay, so maybe now you and I are both starting to work at the same time now. I started in 2008. You've been in business for a while at this point. And in 2008, when I started, it was all about blogging. Like content marketing started taking a role. YouTube wasn't really in anybody's strategy. It was kind of a afterthought for many. And podcasting wasn't even necessarily around yet, although I got in early on that, thankfully. But blogging was the thing. I was blogging 3 times a week. And I know you had, I think QuickSprout was around at the time, and you were blogging there as well. What was your strategy for mastering the sort of blogosphere and having that work for you at the time?
Yeah, I was just blogging so I can generate traffic, and I was having fun doing it. I was never trying to make money from the blog. It was just a fun place and a fun thing for me to do. I was trying to focus all my energy on software. At that time, I was doing a company called Kissmetrics, which did not work out. But yeah, I was just blogging for fun. Now, when you started blogging, you know, I was following your journey, especially very early on. You were blogging and generating income and sharing your journey with everyone. But what was the main premise? So you don't have to go back to work, or?
I mean, I didn't want to go back to work, but it was mainly a way to share how my other businesses were helping. I had an architecture related business that was doing really well. That's what I was talking about, because when I was trying to research internet marketing.
But you had an architecture degree, no?
I did. Yeah, I did. And I got laid off. That's what started this whole thing. So I'm very grateful that I got let go, although that day and that month did not feel good. It was a blessing in disguise for sure. But I was just blogging about this thing that so many people were asking about. How did you survive the recession? Tell me how to build a website. Show me how you are making money. Show me how you're making sales. And I was like, I'm just kind of figuring this out as I go. I'm going to write everything I'm learning and just share it. And that's really what started to help people and take off, which was really great. And then the income report, I was only meaning to do it 1 month because I just wanted to share like, okay, this is actually happening. Look, like here's what I'm spending and here's how much I'm making. And then everybody just was super stoked on it. So I kept going with it for a number of years. But I didn't even make money with Smart Passive Income for a year and a half, actually. It was not until I dove into this world of affiliate marketing. That was really the first foray into affiliate marketing for me, was in 2009, 2010. And it was absolutely huge because I could just continue to share the things I was doing, but then just go, here's the tool I was using, click my affiliate link. And that opened up a whole world of income because there were many tools that I was talking about, search engine tools, blogging, hosting, and camera equipment, podcasting equipment, all that sort of stuff. Did you ever dive into affiliate marketing on your website? And if so, what were some of your like top products?
I did over the years. A few years ago, I started diving into affiliate marketing, but before then, not much. And most of them ended up being like hosting, voiceover IP does really well, domain registration is okay. payroll, like stuff like that, like the old school B2B services.
Yeah, yeah.
Cloud computing does well, but I was never big on affiliate, and I've never has been able to get a site to generate as much affiliate income that you or another one who does quite well is John Lee Dumas. I think he's still
doing it.
And or Syed from WP Beginner. Like, I never really cracked the affiliate nut. I think I could have cracked it. I just never focused on it enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you had these other companies and the software and consultation and other things. I've met a lot of your team and you guys do amazing work. And the other thing that always stood out to me from you is you always seem to know where to put yourself and your content before even others do, right? I feel like you were pretty early to blogging. And then even in like the YouTube space, you were pretty early on. Then you caught on with the podcasting and you've just been doing well with that. And YouTube, I'm curious because I remember when you first started your videos, I mean, this was years ago and they were very formulaic, I must say. I mean, you're jumping across the screen and you're in front of a white screen or something or a white background. And like the channel's exploded. It's like, how long did it take for you to realize there was traction on YouTube? And when did that even start for you?
Yeah, so YouTube, my guess is 3-4 years ago. I could be wrong on the time frame, but somewhere around there. Started creating videos. A lot of trial and error at the beginning, was really formulaic, 3-minute videos, wasn't working out. Some videos were a minute or even 2 minutes. Still followed a specific formula, you know, from intro to telling people to subscribe to then telling people the meat and potatoes of the video and then ending with a pitch like, hey, check out my ad agency. And that's done quite well, although it's starting to not do as well. Funny enough, I record my videos in batches. So let's fast forward 3+ years. YouTube channel hit 1 million+ subscribers. I'm recording a new batch of videos next week and I'm adjusting the formula. So think of it more like TikTok style videos, right? Where people are just throwing in a lot of B-roll and you're not telling them, hey, subscribe or click the alert notification or any of that stuff. And you're just going into the meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
And trying to use some humor and entertainment, at least with the editing, to make it so people keep watching. And I don't know how that'll do, but we're going to start rotating up and quote unquote try the TikTok style, but in longer form videos.
I like that. TikTok style to me also means kind of a lot of jump cuts and different scenes and things to look at. I mean, this is the way, I mean, talk about today, the attention span of people is just getting shorter and shorter with stories and shorts and reels and all these things happening. It's just like, it's we really got to keep the eyeballs moving or else people will get bored and leave and move on to the next thing. So I like this experiment and I like that. I'm going to be paying attention to see how you do that. With the YouTube channel over 1 million subscribers, I know that in our space, at least the RPMs, the revenue per 1,000 views is pretty high. Like, how has the YouTube channel specifically been doing monetarily? Is it like bringing you some good bank every month now that you've been at it and consistent for so long?
I've never tried putting ads. I don't know how much they generate.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah. When you say they're good, what is the rough range is that they monetize at?
I mean, $30 per 1,000. Yeah, bro, put it on.
So like I'm at 1 million divided by 1,000 times 30. I'd probably make 30 grand a month.
I think you could. I mean, I'm at about 8 to 10 on my channel and I'm about a third of your subscribership. And you know, subscribers aren't even really the thing that you need to shoot for. It's views, right? Because most of your views today, unlike before, are coming from people who've never seen you before, right? Which is why I think this strategy of yours to not say like, hey, welcome back, I'm Neil, subscribe, and then get into it. It's like people don't even know who you are yet. You haven't earned the ability to like get that subscription yet. So I like that because most views are coming from people who have never found you before. But dude, you should just, I mean, turn on ads and see what happens. I'll split the revenue with you if you want. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I don't think I'll turn on ads. If it made like $1 million a month, I'd probably do it, but.
Okay. I might try to convince you otherwise down the road, but. I respect that. I mean, you have your ad agency, right? You said these videos are pointing to your ad agency. Tell me about the ad agency and what work there is like now.
Yeah, sure. So the ad agency was created. We're on our 5th year.
Okay.
I remember we ran into you at the WeWork in downtown San Diego.
Yeah.
Years ago. So Fifth Year it's the fastest growing company ever created. We were number 21 on Inc. 500's list last year.
Wait, ever created, like anywhere, not just like that you've ever created?
No, that I've ever created, not someone else's.
Oh, okay.
Faster growing companies than this, but for me, this is the fastest growing company. Okay. We ended our fourth year with 640 employees or something like that. Something, I think by the end of this year, we'll be at 900 to 1,000 is my rough guess.
What? How do you, and you're CEO of the company?
I am not.
You're not CEO. What's your position?
I think my official title is CMO.
Okay.
I think the title is irrelevant. I don't even know
right.
if I do on a daily basis. But
that means you're not necessarily running the show entirely.
At all. I don't run it at all.
Was it that way from the start?
My co-founder, Mike, ran it. I think you met him once or twice.
Yeah, Mike's cool. I like Mike.
So he ran it. He moved from San Diego to Vegas. And the ad agency, we had the brand from YouTube, the content, all that. People wanted to pay us for consulting and we never did it. And then we finally turned on that faucet. And I think the first year of business that we were in, we did $5 million in the first year. And then we doubled the next year. The year after, we grew at a much bigger multiple than double.
Wow. This is big leagues.
And then even last year, we doubled over the previous. I skipped a year where we really grew because then people would know our numbers.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
You can imagine 640 people, right? So then.
I mean, that's huge. That's a big company. To me, in my head right now, just managing, 10 to 12 is already a lot. But like 640? That's insane. How does, like, I can't even fathom that. That's like a large corporation feel. Like, how does that? I don't even begin to understand. I don't even know what questions to ask, honestly. Who is your client? Tell me about your client. What are they like?
Yeah. So our client is like Cisco. Like we do work for Cisco or SoFi or Western Union or FTX, the crypto company, or like Adobe. Mm-hmm. Most of our clients are like really large corporations.
And you're helping them.
Yeah, like we're in a pitch right now, RFP for an airplane manufacturer. I don't know if the RFP lets me name the company that
you don't have to worry about that.
But like there's not too many airplane manufacturers, right? The chances are you've flown on their plane.
And so what does the ad agency do? You're literally managing their ads for their products?
SEO, pay-per-click, Facebook ads, all social media ads, organic social, email, CRO, but anything digital. So like we'll even do, things like Hulu ads. We'll pretty much do any type of digital marketing for companies, creating content, like whatever is needed to really help them scale and grow.
Give me a sense of, so these larger corporations, right? How much ad budget, for example, are you able to handle, right? You get a fee and you get a payment, right? For the agency such, but like, I'm sure they give you a pool of money to go, okay, here, or maybe you recommend a particular dollar amount to spend to have them do what they want to do. Like how many dollars are we talking that you're spending on ads and whatnot on like a company in general?
So like on a monthly basis or let's say client basis, we have some people who barely spend any money on ads, like 100, 200 grand a month. And then we have clients that spend over $10 million a month. Literally, like we have companies, like one company will spend well over 10 million. We have quite a few of those. So it's like, we're not at nine figures a month in ad spend management, but we're getting up there.
That's crazy. Do you, as a company, I know it's different for every company, and sorry if this is too invasive of a question, but are you charging like a percentage of ad spend for
percentage of ad?
And then at tens of millions, I mean, you can do the math, right? Yeah. Jeez, that's crazy. So what?
Yo, and then all the services, right? So it's percentage of ad spend plus services.
So what is it like now that we've had this chat of like where you came from and the software that you built and some of the hustles that you had to now running this agency? Do you prefer it? Do you like it? I mean, obviously the money's there and it's better, but like, honestly, how do you feel about being sort of a CMO at this like larger company now versus what it was like back in the day when we were kind of just plain scrappy entrepreneur?
So what I quickly learned is your company is not really your company anymore. It's a company pretty much that's run by everyone. All your employees aren't really employees. They take part in a company. It becomes like an independent organization, right? So even though my ad agency is called Neil Patel Digital or NP Digital for short, it's not really me anymore. It's a corporation. And I know that's funny to say, but when you have like 2-3 people, it's like, hey, we built this company. It's no longer that feeling. It's just like and we're not really big yet compared to like a Microsoft or Apple or anything. We're still tiny.
Sure.
Those. But it just becomes like a number, right? Like you're just an organization. Best way to describe it is we started expanding international. So we have US, we have someone who leads up Canada. We have someone who leads up Brazil, leads up India, Australia, and the UK. And we're adding, I think, 9 more international regions this year, right? So we have to find leaders who can head up like that country. Because like even people like place like India, most people say, oh, you have an India office outsourced. Like, no, if you saw how much venture capital and money is being poured into India, companies there can spend an arm and a leg. So we'll have a division that just services companies there. But I was talking to a guy a few weeks ago, and he's like, hey, I'm Dan. I was like, hey, Dan, what's up? He's just like, yeah, I run Australia for you. I was like, oh, cool. Pleasure to meet you. I'm like, how long have you been here? He's like, 6 months. So I was like, oh, great. You know, but like and it's not that I don't want to know him. It's just so many people are like, I was speaking at a conference in Utah a few months ago at a company called Podium. It was their own internal event. And a few people came up to me and they're like, hey, what's up, Neil? And like, they acted like they know me. I'm like, hey, how are you? I'm like, I'm so sorry about this. What's your name? I'm like, oh, we met before. They're like, and there was two of them next to me, like, oh, we both work for you. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I spent time and I got to know them. But it's really hard. Like just in the United States, we're hiring roughly 30 people every single month. Now you do lose some employees as well. So it's not 30 net plus, right? Because you're also, you have attrition.
Right.
And scale. But so like, it's impossible for me to personally know everyone at this point.
And how do you feel about that? Are you fine? You're fine with that?
I'm fine with that. I have no issues. At first, it was a hard thing to get over. I was like, that doesn't feel personal enough. That feels real. But there's just no way I can get to know everyone. But I do try to help. Like one of our employees, I never met them, lost their house in a fire. And I won't say their name, but they lost their house in the fire. And I found out from someone on my team. I never met them. I didn't even know this. And they were raising money on one of those sites, like the GoFundMe's or something. And I gave them the whole amount of money. I put anonymous, so I don't know if they can see it was me. I hope they can't see it's me. Wow. But like, I still want to be there for my team, right?
That's awesome.
I want to support them, not just from a business side, but also personal side. Now, on the flip side, you have how many people now?
8 full-time.
That's a lot. And your percentages, I remember when you started off, it was like pure profit, right? How has it been for you going from 0 to 8? And I've never managed tons of people. So to me, 8 is an arm and a leg worth of people to manage on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, I am thankful that I am not CEO right now either. I recently stepped down and I'm playing founder, owner, and kind of floater and creator. Because that's what I want to do. Matt on my team has become the CEO. However, I still manage and talk to people. And as far as like eating into profits, I mean, absolutely, it eats into profits. I mean, our employees are our number one expenditure. However, it's able to bring me peace of mind. It's able to bring me space. It's able to bring me time back that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And we wouldn't have been able to reach or affect the lives of as many people if it wasn't for the team. So I am totally okay spending a lot of money. I mean, we're talking high 6-figure range every year to have the employees on board to be able to provide the experience that we want. And although the quote unquote margins are far less than when it was just me from the work that I'm doing and how passive everything was, I'm happier than I ever could have been. And I'm not burned out, which is the biggest thing.
And out of curiosity, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want, you know, I don't need to know your numbers before you hired anyone, but let's imagine you're making X dollars before, whatever the X was, with no staff, almost pure profit in that case. When you hired 8 people, I'm assuming your revenue did not go up by 8X,
no.
Right? No. Did it go up substantial, or did you not? Like, if you look at the profit you had when you're running things by yourself, right? That scrappy hustler way, and I don't mean hustler in a bad way. When you hired the people, was your profit in total still more because they were able to grow the revenue enough, or?
No.
So when your profit went backwards, not percentage, it went, total.
Correct. The profit went backwards. My take-home money went backwards. But I feel like that's, I'm buying a shield against burnout. I'm buying, with that money that was removed from my pocket, a peace of mind. And the fact that the business now could run without me is also huge, because I could move a different direction, or maybe I get hit by a bus or something and it could still be there and provide value and whatnot. It's an asset that could run on its own without me. And that, to me, is worth paying for. Would I've ever dreamt when I first started that I'd be spending this much money on team and, you know, choosing to not make as much money in the end? No, but I'm grateful that I'm here now. And that is an excellent question, because it really puts into perspective, well, why are we doing this, right? It's like, what do you ultimately want? I mean, more money is just more money, and I'm happy and satisfied with where I'm at now. And I have investments and other things in place, and I play advisor to a number of different companies, which is a new world that's opened up to me in the last few years, which I absolutely enjoy. I don't know if you do any of that, but it's been really fun to be involved in other companies, but not have to like do the day to day.
Yeah.
So in that way, you know, building the team has allowed me to spend more time, and spending more money on the team and other things have been enabled me to spend more time on building relationships and getting out there and going to events and creating these relationships that now have turned into dollars that I'm now earning in other ways that wouldn't have been able to come out otherwise. If I was always just me, I wouldn't be able to spend some of my brain space on other people's companies. And now I'm an advisor. I own a share of those companies, and I can dedicate some of my expertise and relationship capital to them as well. So I feel like it's come back, in not directly from profit from hiring the team, and it's come back in many other ways.
Yeah, I think it's well worth it. And the thing that it's hard for a lot of people to get through in their thought process is, the moment you have these people, you get more freedom, more flexibility. You can spend it with your family, or you can go on a vacation, which is hard when you're a solo guy or solo woman. And then on the flip side, that you also mentioned as well, is if something wrong happened to you, you know, you have stability for your family, even if you're gone. I would knock on wood right now, but there's no wood next to me.
Yeah, I'll knock on wood for you. There you go.
Well, that we both live a very long, healthy life. The other thing that I've also found too is there's a point where the money doesn't matter as much. Like, everyone has this belief and notion that when you're an entrepreneur, like, you need to make $1 million a year or whatnot. It's easier to just cut back on your expenses and live a normal life and have less stress than it is to try to play the game where, like, you have to hit a specific number.
And true.
I think it's an easier way to live life than it is to be like, okay, I have to reach these milestones. Well, I was like, I don't got any investors. I don't really have to. Let's just live a chill, relaxed life. And if I hit them, great. And if I don't, at least I tried, and it is what it is.
Yeah. Well said, Neil. Thank you for that perspective. I think that's going to help a lot of people. To finish up here, you know, you have however many accounts you have in your ad business now, you're helping all these companies with their marketing. You've got to have a ton of data coming in that you understand what is working and what's not working today, like today in 2022. And perhaps you have some knowledge about different places, maybe the metaverse, I don't know, that we should be focusing on for the future of our businesses. So can you extrapolate with the work that you do at all these companies and all the money that's being spent for a creator like myself who has a medium-sized team, or even a solo creator right now? What should we be paying attention to? What is working right now that we could get access to, because we don't have tens of millions of dollars, but you could still infer from that?
So I think the metaverse is going to be big, but that's far out, right? Okay. Like, think about that, to create that experience where you're shopping at Nordstrom's mall or Macy's without really being at Macy's. Like, that's an extreme example that's monetizable. We're far off from that. Voice search, it's here. Voice commerce is booming. Not enough marketers are focusing on it, but billions and billions of dollars get spent on voice commerce. So that's something that marketers need to pay attention to.
Okay.
The other big one that no one's really paying attention to is, if you actually look at the trend. So I looked at Google's ad revenue and Facebook ad revenue over time. And even during 2008 crash, when you created your business, Google didn't have a down year. Digital ad spend has continually just went up. The revenue, the cost per click, right? The revenue for the Googles, the Facebooks, the Snaps, it's doing better and better. The cost is just going up for the business. The big thing if a listener is going to take away from this is figure out what you can give away for free that won't cost you a lot, that people find that's very valuable, that all your competition charges for. That is the best mousetrap in marketing that very few people are focusing on, but they have to, especially if you're small and medium businesses, because how else are we going to compete with the big corporations? Now, a great example of this is we bought a tool called UberSess for $120,000. Put millions into it. I went a little too extreme and I don't recommend people going that far.
Okay.
And we gave away what our competitors were charging $100 a month for free. Now, I'm not saying my solution that I give away for free is better than what people are paying $100 a month for, but it was good enough where they were just like, oh, I don't have to pay $100 a month. You know, a large chunk of people could get value for free. And the point I'm making is that grew organically word of mouth and it helped build a brand.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to do well these days, it goes back to this. The thing I have is everyone's looking for brands. What's differentiating you? Not much. Everyone can copy you these days.
Right.
Brand. Kylie Jenner did really well from Kylie Cosmetics, not because Kylie Cosmetics has better products. Maybe they do, but it did well because of her brand. So how do you build a brand? It's hard for us to be Insta famous or Facebook famous or social media or blogging famous. But you know what the easiest thing to replicate is? Give away something for free that everyone's used to paying for, that doesn't cost you too much, that will bring you all those eyeballs within your space, and then monetize through other channels. We give away a lot of software for free, and then we monetize. And of course, we have paid plans, but majority of it's free, and we monetize through consulting, right? That's an example on what I mean on the extreme basis.
Can't really get any simpler than that. And I'm like trying to overcomplicate this. It's not.
It's just hard to figure out what that free thing is, right?
Right.
And it has to be valuable enough. Like if you're like, oh, I'm creating this ebook that's 100 pages and I'm going to make it free instead of charging when other people charge. People don't really read those 100 page ebooks in the first place. Some people will, most won't. So there's not enough value there. But on the flip side, if you ended up giving away something that everyone's used to spending $10 a month for, 20 or 30, like if Netflix was 100% free, it would blow up. It already is big, but it would blow up even more because they'd be like, ah, oh, Netflix is free. Great.
Right. Huh. A lot to think about.
What's hilarious is I always thought about Netflix's model. I'm like, I wonder what would happen if they just made it 100% free and they just put ads in there and then you can pay the money to get rid of the ads.
I mean, that's the Hulu model, is it not?
Yeah, but Netflix has better content, right?
Right. That's true.
That's my opinion, though. Maybe other people would disagree with me on that, but I would say most people would agree that Netflix has better content.
I mean, Netflix, if you're listening, Neil Patel's ad agency kind of knows what they're doing. You might want to reach out to them, just saying. Neil, this was such a fun chat. Thank you so much for coming back to time with me. And here we are today. And I love that piece of advice at the end for anybody who's starting something or struggling to stand out. What an amazing way to just go, yo, here's this thing. You're used to paying for it. Here it is for free. Now let me help you with your next steps after that. That just makes complete sense. Neil, where can people go to find you, follow you, and see all your things?
NeilPatel.com.
Easy as that. Neil, thanks so much for today. I appreciate you. And it's always good to catch up with you. Hopefully we can see each other in person again soon.
Same.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Neil Patel. Such a fun conversation. And like I said, that epic piece of advice there at the end could be a game changer for you. And it's gotten me to think about different things that we could offer that, yes, normally are paid, that could bring people in, get people talking, and get people to sign up for something else potentially. So there's a lot of potential there for sure. Or potential, right? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. But Neil Patel, find him at neilpatel.com. Thank you, Neil. I appreciate you. And I look forward to hearing what you think about this episode. Give me a shout out at Pat Flynn on Instagram or Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this conversation. You can tag Neil as well, Neil Patel, P-A-T-E-L. If you want the show notes and all the links and resources mentioned in this episode, head on over to smartpassiveincome.com. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And make sure to hit subscribe if you haven't already, because we got a lot of other great epic content coming your way. And as always, we have a follow-up Friday episode where it's just me. We chat a little bit. That's coming up soon. And a lot of more great stuff coming your way. So don't miss out. Hit subscribe and I'll see you in the next episode. Peace out. Cheers. And as always, Team Flynn for the win. Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Gartland. Sound and video editing by Sean West Media. The Smart Passive Income Podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Hey, have you ever wondered what makes the difference between a 1 and a 5-star review? Well, turn into Behind the Review, a phenomenal podcast from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Yelp's small business expert, Emily Washkovic, features a different conversation with a different reviewer or business owner to find out what was really going on, as the title suggests, behind the review. Recently, for example, Emily featured an episode about Aldea Country Eatery, the number 5 spot in the world on Yelp's top 100 places to eat. Emily interviews a wide variety of customers and business owners from a wide variety of industries, tabletop gaming companies, fitness industry, you name it. This is a really fascinating peek into what makes a great customer experience for any business, and you won't want to miss out. So listen to Behind the Review right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.